It's a thrill to welcome Roy Fielding to today's podcast. Nowadays, Roy works as chief scientist for Day Software. In the formative era of the web, he was the primary architect of the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, HTTP. He's also a co-founder of the Apache Software Foundation. He enjoys the distinction of having written a PhD thesis that's been read more widely and commented upon even more widely than probably any other. It was his thesis that gave us the term representational state transfer, or REST. In this conversation, we discuss the origins of web architectural style, as well as some of the work Roy's done at Day Software to bring those principles into the world of Java-based content management. There are a few things. I don't want to sort of drag you through the whole history of HTTP and REST and so on, and it's one of those topics that can suck up hours and hours of time, and I have no intention of doing that, but there are a couple things that I did want to ask you about, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
I was looking around and found a comment that you had posted to Adam Bosworth's blog,
right,
back when Adam had a blog, and he was kind of exploring REST with a beginner's perspective, as he put it, and I was looking at the comment that you made, and there are just a number of fascinating points there that it occurred to me would be useful to ask you to elaborate on at least a little bit. If you don't mind, I'll just kind of mention a couple of quotes that jumped out at me. One being, you said, "Why is there no WSDL for REST? Because HTML is the WSDL for REST, often supplemented by less understandable choreography mechanisms such as JavaScript. That usually doesn't sit well with most real application designers."
Well, if you think of JavaScript as a workflow description language, then they would have a different opinion. I wouldn't say that JavaScript is an excellent environment for scripting. In fact, one of the things I put in my dissertation was a description of why it was that JavaScript was more successful on the web environment than the Java applets.
Mm-hmm.
And it really has a lot to do with both the ability to understand small segments of code and the ability to process them iteratively or interactively so that you can do something interesting with the user without completely interrupting their, or having them wait basically until the entire program is loaded.
Yeah, and I think it's the interactive piece of that is the key point. A little later on, you talk about how systems based on what you call control messages,
right,
are in a very different category from systems where the decisions that get made are being made by human beings, and that's in a sense sort of ultimately the rationale for designing data-driven systems that are web-like, because people need to interact with them in lots of ways that you can't declaratively define.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier to say that people need to reuse them in various unanticipated ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that when they're building an application, they're building something that's going to last forever. And almost always that's false. Usually when they're building an application, the only thing that lasts forever is the data, at least if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
If you're lucky, the data retains some semblance of archivability or reusability over time. So many times people focus on building an application around the idea of the control integration, where you're trying to do specific things, and so you provide interfaces to do those specific things. So, for example, if you want to reformat a paragraph, you'd provide an option, reformat paragraph,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to just supplying the paragraph and letting code that's developed either by you or by someone else do the reformatting on it.
Mm-hmm. It must frustrate you. You're someone who has probably been quoted more, and probably from your perspective, more incorrectly than almost anyone in the world of web technology. I mean, there are undoubtedly thousands of people who cite things that you have said or supposedly said about REST, and however have never read your dissertation, and what does it feel like to be in that situation?
Well, first of all, it's bizarre. The main thing I was always told as a graduate student at UCI was that nobody would ever read the dissertation. It didn't matter what I wrote in it, really, because ultimately nobody would ever read it. So it was a bit of a surprise to later on read people writing stories about reading my dissertation, which was something from another universe.
There is a meme out there to the effect that what we now call REST architectural style was, in a sense, discovered post facto as opposed to having been anticipated from the beginning. Do you agree with that or not?
No, it's a little bit of everything, in the sense that there are core principles involved that Tim Berners-Lee was aware of when he was working on it. I first talked to Tim about what I was calling HTTP object model at the time, which was a terrible name for it.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked when I was at the W3C in the summer of 95 about the software engineering principles. Being a graduate student in software engineering, that was my focus and my interest originally. Of course, all the stuff that I was doing for the web was just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, that was not considered research.
But did you, at the time, think of what you then called the HTTP object model as being in contrast to more API-like and procedural approaches?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was definitely, and the reason for that is because the first thing I did for the web, the first thing I did was a statistical analysis software, which turned out to be very effective at helping people understand the value of communicating over the web. The second thing was a program called MomSpider, which was one of the first web spiders, mechanism for testing all the links that were on the web.
And that was when you also worked on libwwwPerl, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the reason I created the libwww-Perl, which is, by the way, never name a software project something that's too hard to say. it's just terrible for conferences. And that was the reason I created that protocol library. And really, at the time, it was only the second protocol library available for the web.
Mm-hmm.
It was a combination of pieces from various sources as well as a lot of my own work in terms of filling out the details and providing an overall view of what it is a web client should do with an HTTP library. And as a result of that design process, I realized some of the things that Tim Berners-Lee had designed into the system. And I also found a whole bunch of cases where the design didn't make any sense, or the way it had been particularly implemented over at NCSA or one of the other clients or various history of the web had turned out to be not fitting with the rest of the design.
Mm-hmm.
And so that led to a lot of discussions with the other early protocol developers, particularly people like Rob McCool and Tony Sanders and Ari Luotonen, people who were building their own systems and understood both what they were doing with the web and also what kind of complaints they were getting from users. And from that, I distilled a model of basically what was the core of HTTP, because if you look back in the 93-94 time frame, the HTTP specification did not look all that similar to what it does now. It had a whole range of methods that were never used.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of talk about various aspects of object orientation, which really never applied to HTTP.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all of that came out of Tim's original implementation of libwww, which was Objective-C implementation that was trying to be as portable as possible.
Hmm.
And so it had a lot of the good principles of sort of the interface separation and generosity inside the library, and the same principles that I ended up using in the Perl library, although they were completely independently developed. It was just one of those things where that kind of interaction has a way of leading towards a more extensible design.
So was focusing down on a smaller set of verbs partly driven by the experience of having people starting to use the web and starting to experience what URLs could be in a human context as well as in a programmatic context?
Well, that was really a combination of things. One is that that's a fairly common paradigm. If you're trying to interoperate with people you've never met, try to keep it as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's also just inherent in the notion of using URIs to identify everything, which is of course, really the basis of what the web is,
mm-hmm.
provides you with that frame of mind that you have a common resource and you want to have a common resource interface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of the limited number of methods, it's not really so much limited as there's one method for which all of the performance issues are designed. So all the performance issues of the web are designed around GET. There's really nothing else that you can do on the web, at least until just recently, other than retrieving representations of something mm-hmm. that require a huge amount of scalability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The only recent change in that has been the growth of so many blogs and then the scalability requirements of handling pingbacks and finding out what the current status is of a blog. It's actually a significant number of requests right now.
Yeah. So to kind of try to bridge from that world to your current work at Day Software and involvement with the JSR 170 content repository stuff, I saw you at a conference, I think it was the Jill Bain conference,
right.
I saw you at a couple of those, but the one where I saw you speak was in 2005, and you made the comment that what you were trying to do in part was recapitulate principles of web architecture in the realm of enterprise applications. And I thought that was an interesting comment, and maybe it would be something you'd like to elaborate on as a kind of a lead-in to talking about the content stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I try to emphasize is that there is no single architecture for every problem. I don't do much advocacy myself. A lot of the folks who advocate using the REST architectural style sometimes forget to mention that style is designed for a particular context, and that's communication over the Internet, not necessarily using multiple organizations involved, but definitely designed to be scalable in support of long-distance links and multiple organizations and application deployments where the clients and the servers need to evolve independently.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that led into its design. The problem I've found is people sometimes think that, well, if you have one design that works for one application area, it should automatically work for all application areas.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, certainly if you look at the first part of my dissertation, it's trying to describe why that's not the case. There are trade-offs involved on every architecture decision. So with the JSR 170 and what's currently JSR 283, we're trying to take the same engineering principles and architectural principles that we apply to the web and try to see what's applicable to the communication inside the application server or inside the server-based implementation of server-based applications.
And so what do you think does and doesn't apply?
Well, the main thing is the issue of latency. The Java API is focused on passing objects around, whereas, of course, in the message passing architecture via HTTP, you can't pass object references. You have to pass actual data. And there is a great deal of latency for each of those interactions, so you're trying to minimize the interactions much more than you're trying to minimize the data that's transferred.
Mm-hmm.
So that constraint goes away inside the application server. You don't have the problem so much of dealing with the latency of individual object calls, but you do still have the difference between data-oriented architecture and a content or a control-oriented architecture. So what we're trying to do then is move the data-oriented aspects that are available in the web, essentially identify everything with the URI, except in this case it's just the path of a URI,
mm-hmm.
to make everything within that space searchable, and then provide a limited number of interfaces with a common data model that application developers can implement that interface and then replace the back-end storage mechanism with whatever is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
It's really it's an attempt to try to take the same idea of a data-sharing universe, but squeeze it inside the application server where there aren't quite so many constraints in terms of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, as soon as we did that, people wanted to remote it. They wanted to be able to have remote access of the protocol between one server to another. It's difficult to go back and explain that, this API is designed for internal server interactions. If you want a server-to-server interaction, you just put HTTP on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And you interact that with that interface, and inside the implementation, you would do the JSR 170 thing.
Although you did, when we discussed this on another occasion, you did, I think, tell me that you thought that web dev could be mapped pretty well into the JSR 170 interface.
Right. There are ways to map them. In fact, our own implementations and the Apache implementations all have at least one web dev interface, sometimes more than one.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what that allows you to do is move large content in and out fairly effectively. So you can do a save as dialog in the Microsoft Office application, and it does a web dev request to the server.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take that web dev request, if it's an XML file, for example, our web dev server will then take that XML file and break it up into a tree of XML elements and attributes and content, and be able to actually store that within the JCR repository as if the application had individually saved those elements so that it could then do various operations on those elements.
Mm-hmm.
And the same kind of concept can apply to any media type that's fairly hierarchical in nature. Even something like Excel spreadsheets or even Word documents have a fairly hierarchical paragraph format.
Mm-hmm.
So it provides an alternative interface. It's not really the same as the JSR 170 interface. It's really a mechanism to use HTTP and WebDev to provide a file-oriented view of the contents that are within the JCR repository.
A question that I've always had about this stuff is, why Java necessarily? In a world where, on the one hand, a content repository from the perspective of your stuff, it has a lot in common with an XML data store. And there are, on the one hand, growing numbers of mature XML database products. And on the other hand, all of the leading relational databases are growing in the maturity of their XML implementations. And none of those things imply any language bindings necessarily.
This is a standard for a subset of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the JSR standards are all specific to the Java platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply it's an organization that's focused on Java standards. The other thing is, while the data sources tend to be in a lot of different content repositories, a lot of different ways to access them, a great deal of the application development on the server side right now is being done in Java. So it provides an API specific to Java developers for the purpose of essentially building reusable applications and reusable data stores. But at the same time, because it is defining an API, it's fairly easy to take that API and use it for other languages. I know there's been a PHP interface developed, another group developed a .NET version of it. So it's not really restricted to the language. Except, of course, in the names of the interfaces are all based on Java.
I was a little bit facetious when I said, why Java? I mean, I get that this is a Java community of developers, but there's the maturity of XML data stores on the one hand. And then on the other hand, there is a lot of interest in making web services style componentization efficient to the point where it's practical on the same box. Paul Patrick from BEA put it this way. He said, there's nothing in web services that requires a wire. The flexible language neutral web services style of component integration, which historically was performance constrained, you know, may not forever suffer that constraint. And if that's true,
it's kind of a hard question to answer because there's a combination of things going on there. Much of web services tends to be market oriented rather than technology oriented. So quite frequently you'll see things that are done in web services that people say, well, this is the next great thing of interoperability. And their example is basically taking an old protocol or an old message exchange pattern and adding angle brackets around it, changing the data form into XML. Now, this isn't long-lived data, so there's absolutely no reason for it to be in XML. But because there's a standardization effort around it, there is a perceived market value in providing that interface, even if the customers don't like it. So it's difficult to see. What I work on, and part of the problem I have about talking about JSR 170 is that my work for day is generally 3 years down the road of being deployed. JSR 170 is what I did. I helped day start when I first started with the company 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's just history to you now, huh?
Yeah, and it's not that it's not still applicable. It's just hard for me to keep up with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because my view is on things that are down the road. So one of the things I'm working on is the WACA protocol, which would be a replacement for HTTP and make it more efficient, specifically for things like internal application interfaces.
This is the which protocol?
WACA. W-A-K-A.
Wow, news to me.
It's a protocol that I first described back at ApacheCon in 2002, I think it was. It's something I do on my spare time. It's a binary token-based replacement for HTTP. Don't really have a better way of describing it. it's all done in my head. It's not on paper, though. So it's one of those things that I've been working on for a while, and I'm almost to the point where I can make it an open project. One of the goals of that is, as you say, to create a language-independent mechanism for exchanging data-oriented messages using the REST application style. It's still the same principles involved and the same design mechanisms. The difference is that we get rid of the HTTP syntax. We make it possible to interleave metadata with data, so you don't have all the stuff up front, all the header fields up front. You just have a little bit of information up front and a lot of data that can be interleaved in multiple streams.
Like independent frames?
Essentially independent frames, but done in a way that's hopefully as efficient as possible without being entirely generic. So it's not like trying to replace TCP.
Right.
It's trying to build an application protocol that is as efficient as anything that you might be able to do custom-wise and yet be something that would be generally applicable, just like HTTP is generally applicable.
So this is, it sounds like, not really at all related to binary XML initiatives, but in spirit shares similar values.
It does have similar aspects. No, it's not related at all. Frequently, the binary XML initiatives are trying to find efficient data formats for fairly fixed structures. Almost always, the first thing they get rid of is the extensible part, which I kind of find amusing. I really don't understand the need to, well, I guess I do understand why people want to reuse, associate themselves with XML, but to start out by violating XML's core principles is, it seems a little bizarre.
Right. Well, if it can be done in an InfoSet preserving way, then that's good.
Right. Ultimately, at the W3C, at least when I was on the tag, the question boiled down to, is great, you know, there's certainly a reason for doing this in particular applications, but so far there's no reason for it to be a standard. You know, for people to have interoperable binary XML.
So does WACA stand for something?
WACA is the Maori name for canoe.
Okay.
I'm part Maori, so it's from New Zealand.
So from wiki to WACA.
Well, it's one of the few four-letter words that I can get away with.
You're not then involved in the follow-on to JSR 170, the 283 stuff?
Oh, I am. But really, at more of an advisory capacity.
Right.
I've also been the chair of the JackRabbit project for Apache.
Right.
So I have been involved in various ways, but it's just not my core focus.
Right. So in as much as there is some conceptual overlap between web dev and this stuff, what's your takeaway in general on web dev in terms of, you know, what it got right and wrong and what has or hasn't happened with it over the years that is worth noting?
Well, web dev was led by Jim Whitehead.
Mm-hmm.
He was my a friend of mine and also my office mate at UC Irvine.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. In fact, that's how he ended up being involved in the effort, is that I knew that we needed an authoring standard for the web, and there was no way I could do it within the IETF's, within the general HTTP working group at the time,
mm-hmm.
because trying to get an authoring design through a group that had at least 500 different implementers actively concerned about the standardization development is quite difficult. So we essentially had to trim HTTP's description down to the point that everyone was willing to implement right then,
mm-hmm.
and then have the web dev group work on the authoring aspects that a different set of people were interested in implementing.
Mm-hmm.
So he led that effort and came up with a very good set of requirements for distributed authoring. And I think those are still very applicable to everything that we do on the web. The particular web dev protocol, the RFC 2518, that was developed, however, has a lot of shortcuts applied to it, which I don't think should have been made.
Hmm.
And of course, within any standardization process, you know, the people involved are not going to be 100% happy about what the result is, because ultimately it's a consensus process. But there are some aspects that I thought were just the wrong way to approach it. For example, Microsoft put a great deal of effort into the web early versions of web dev.
They sure did.
It was their primary focus, really. And I should say Microsoft had absolutely no input whatsoever to the HTTP standardization, because at that time they
right.
had no HTTP implementations.
Right.
Well, they got onto web dev in a big way, but their focus was save as dialogues.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted that feature in Office to be able to save as a file
mm-hmm.
to the web. And the problem is trying to convince a group that was only interested in file save dialog that you also have to take into account all of the other things that a resource does. The dynamic content and redirects and a lot of the aspects of the web, which I consider fundamental to the web, they just simply didn't care about. It wasn't part of their customer feature set that they were interested in.
Do you attribute the fact that to this day there are relatively few people who do save to the web routinely? Do you attribute it to that cause?
I think that there's a number of causes there. One of the primary ones is access control mechanisms
mm-hmm.
were never updated the way they were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly because web dev only handled the simple file system style interaction
mm-hmm.
and left out the essentially everything else having to do with what a website would look like. I mean, if you could imagine building a website today without redirects and telling the authors that, well, you can edit files, but you can't actually create permalinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a sustainable solution for web authoring. And there have been attempts to create other specifications that add on to web dev that define things like redirects and bindings and various other aspects.
So from that perspective, would you say that 170 and 283 are more complete in those respects?
Ooh, I would say that 170 is at a slightly more complete. It certainly has a much larger feature set.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is a different environment. It's trying to build interoperability among server-side Java application developers, which is a much easier subset to deal with than the entire internet.
Mm-hmm. And because it's a subset also, I think maybe there's in that scope, there's more opportunity to make some progress on issues like versioning and access control, because at least it's a somewhat narrower scope, right, than the potentially the whole web.
Right, somewhat narrower, but as with any consensus-driven process, the content repository industry isn't new. And as we found, JSR 170 day software pretty much provided most of the architectural input into the process of building JSR 170 specification. So although it wasn't exactly similar to our architecture at the time, it was certainly the philosophy and the way of interacting with the content was very much the same as we have in our own products for the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that, it was a very well-tested, well-defined model, and it was difficult for people to find problems in it that we hadn't already thought of before. Whereas now, with the JSR 283, now that JSR 170 has become a fairly popular implementation standard, although it's not fully deployed in the industry, it has received a lot of interest from content management and application developers.
Mm-hmm.
So now all the existing content repository makers are interested in this interface, and specifically, how can they make the interface apply to their existing content repositories without actually having to...
Well, let's take versioning, because I think that's a really sticky example, because it's one of those things where you almost wonder how much progress can there even ever be in terms of cross-implementation interop, because versioning is going to tend to want to mean different things to different people in different lines of business and in different contexts.
Right. And there is a lot of discussion about that. What is the right versioning model? Should we be limited to one, or should implementations be able to do a subset of them instead? And that is one of the focuses of JSR 283.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a lot of pushback about the extent of the versioning model, mostly because people don't want to have to implement all of it.
So where do things stand right now? How would you characterize the versioning model that is currently implemented in 170 compliant products?
Well, I would put the description, it's a fairly basic versioning model. I'm not sure if it's entirely efficient yet, but pretty much it is very similar to thinking of the versions as a web of relationships between the various content. So it's nice within the content repository that implements versioning, all that versioning process is taken care of for the developer.
Mm-hmm.
But there is not, so far, a great deal of experience in how application developers want to make use of that versioning.
Right.
It's not something like, for example, Subversion,
mm-hmm.
where we have a very clear understanding of how people will want to use a source code repository and place versions upon that.
Mm-hmm.
Versioning is frequently, it doesn't get properly exercised until someone stresses it.
Right. So it's one of these chicken and egg deals where it's you need more miles on the thing to see how people want to use it. And
that's right.
Yeah.
And we are fortunate that Jeffrey Clem, who developed the versioning specification for WebDev and also developed JSR 147, I think, which is also a versioning API.
Mm-hmm.
He's working on within the JSR 170 and 283 working groups as well on this versioning model.
Mm-hmm.
So and he works at the division of IBM that used to be Rational Software. So he has a great deal of versioning experience going all the way back to his dissertation, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he brings a lot of understanding of those problems and also the breadth of understanding of potential versioning issues.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, we've been able to borrow that knowledge and apply it to the API. I wish I could say that we knew for sure it was the right model. But as with anything, we're sort of really in the process of finding out if it's the right model within JSR 283 right now.
And is query in a similar situation? I gather that there's XML style query which is exposed, and also potentially some SQL style approaches are possible. I don't know, you know, whether XQuery is a factor or not. I mean, is that also a little bit in flux right now?
Query isn't so much as in flux. Most of the questions around query are, you know, now that we're 4 years later in the process and things like XQuery are finally somewhat finalized within the W3C, XPath is on a new version, there's a little more clear understanding. The query functionality within JSR 170 is basically XML-like path-based querying. So, and there's two ways of doing that. One is to use the XPath syntax to perform a query and get responses back based on that, or to use a subset of the SQL syntax. Both of those query syntaxes, the JCR only supports a subset of the syntax, and so a subset of the potential number of queries that you might have, so that it's restricted to a fairly small set that all implementations can't handle.
So I'm wondering, in addition to having a plan to replace HTTP, what other ideas are rolling around in your head?
That's kind of an open-ended question. There are lots of things. I end up, one of the luxuries of my position is that you can't really define what it is a chief scientist does. And so it tends to be whatever I happen to think of when I wake up in the morning, shower, and try to figure out what it is I'm supposed to do today. It goes from everything from the unglamorous things of, well, we're moving the office this week. We're actually moving down the street. And so I have to figure out how all the wires are going to be wired in the building. So it varies quite a bit. You may have seen some of my posts on the Atom protocol mailing list.
Yeah.
My interest there is not so much in the process of logging itself, but how do you build an application protocol that fits well with those requirements? And blogging is one of those things where the focus really has to be on simplicity. It's definitely an issue with general HTTP, and you want a design that's going to be working across multiple organizations that don't trust each other. But there's also a lot of focus on user simplicity. How do you make this understandable and easy to use for people who just have no interest at all in learning about computers? And so that's interesting to me. And sometimes it's a little frustrating at design choices that are made, which are frequently based on theoretical hypotheticals that may occur in the 1/1,000,000th of a chance. And part of the REST design is if you're going to optimize things, optimize for the case that's going to happen frequently.
Yeah.
Don't try to optimize for the 1/1,000,000th of a percentage chance.
This was really fun. I appreciate this. Thanks a lot. And we'll be in touch at some point, I'm sure.